Tech WNST, TASS Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are completely calm and perfectly local. Don Moeller joining us here for another Baltimore Positive conversation as we continue what you are lovingly referring to as Arts Week, which is lovingly referring to me as, hey, when this thing's over with, these are the places Jen's going to be wanting you to take her and places you ought to be going. So I'm getting to know lots of folks around town here, Don. And first things first, let's shout out our sponsors. And since you're closer to the chicken and waffles at State Fair than me, I will let you do the honors here.
Well, we remind everybody, it's all about small business right now. They're out there. They're hurting. They need your help. State Fair is open in Catonsville. Breakfast, lunch, dinner. Give them a call. They'll bring it right to the curbside. Our good friends at Faded, I just got a note right before we went on the air that my crab cakes are indeed on the way. So when we're done today, I will be able to pick them up off the front porch. They'll bring them right to your front porch. So go on Faded's website. Click shop now. Have those world-class crab cakes sent to yourself, to your house. And of course, our newest sponsor, Moeller and Gary Realtors, Jeff Moeller. Contact them at MoellerHomes.com or Moeller and Gary Realtors. They're working through the pandemic. They're doing it from long distance, but they're selling homes. So give Jeff a call. Nestor, these are exciting segments, and you and I normally produce them ourselves, but this time a good friend of our guest, Julia Marchetti Alexander, Julia knows Fronda Cohen very, very well. Fronda is one of the great team that worked with us in Baltimore County. As Dutch always said, you're only as good as your team. And Fronda is just an outstanding communications specialist and really our liaison to the arts and cultural world in Baltimore City. So we thank Fronda for setting all of these up. And Julia, welcome to Baltimore Positive.
Oh, my goodness. Thank you so much, Don and Nestor. This is such an honor.
Well, for me, I go back with the arts here. And Joyce Bucci was my art teacher in 10th grade. Don transferred me out of Dundalk High School in 1982. I needed to get into a journalism class. And Don, I bet you don't know this, but the class that I got thrown out of because I moved everything around and into was art appreciation. I had an art appreciation class in 10th grade at Dundalk High, and as part of what we did, we went to the Walters back in the day, and it's so good to have you on, and I caught up with my art instructor, Joyce, who's a rock and roll lady. She's awesome, and I had an Indian dinner with her about 2 months ago. I hadn't seen her in 30 years, and we talked about art, so this is perfect for me to talk about online and coming back. I was supposed to be at the Van Gogh Museum today in Amsterdam, and everything went crazy, and the COVID thing happens, and you're 9 blocks from where I live. You're the nearest art museum to my home. Tell me what we can see and do and what we need to be doing when this whole thing's over with.
So one of the things that I love about being at the Walters is this incredible history here in Baltimore and Maryland of really viewing the Walters Art Museum as almost your living room. And it's a place where when you meet someone and you say you work at the Walters, everyone has a story like yours that is all about interacting with the art in a very, very personal way. And so what I have come to say about the Walters more than anything is not only is it a world-class museum, I mean, it is one of the top 25 art museums in this country and really an incredible asset that we have here in Baltimore. But more than that, it's like a time machine, and you can actually travel the world and travel across time just by walking in its doors. And you can do that on your own time and in your own way because we are the only fully free museum and really arts institution in Baltimore of its kind.
Don, all the Cone sister stuff's coming back to me right now.
Well,
it's true.
Exactly, but that's at our other great museum, which is the Baltimore Museum of Art. But that's what's even better about Baltimore is that it has two great museums of world-class nature.
We are here to learn today. You know, in the shutdown, what people can experience, and I guess every museum in the world, right? Like, we had Anne Frank tickets for this week, and everything was, hey, we'd love to have you here, but make sure when they sent us the disappointment that they're shut, make sure you're going online. And I think, you know, 20, 30 years ago, you kind of had to, like, fly off to Paris and go to the Louvre, right? Now I think the world world has become a place where you see it, then you want to go experience it. But you can touch a lot of things online here during this period of time. And I think so much of what we've talked about in the background of Don, and we kid about education here, but we don't kid about education, that part of the educational part of this would be you're always a click away from the museum, right?
That's right. And the Walters was really an early leader in what we now call digital engagement, but we've been engaged in it for a very, very long time. And one of the things that we were able to do was really just repackage digital assets that we already had. So online access to our collection, our incredible collection and award-winning website that is about our medieval manuscripts. And you can actually go on to our this site and flip through books that are 1,000 years old as if you're turning the pages. And when we were able to, in this crisis, kind of leverage these assets that already existed, what we did was we just repackaged them for easy access on our website. So we now, when you go to walters.org, you will get a page and you can visit our virtual museum and you can look at our medieval manuscripts, you can flip through our collection, you can do some art activities that are super fun, and you can also have access to learning plans, lesson plans that we've worked out with schools here in Maryland and teachers here in Maryland. So all of you new teachers, in other words, parents who are now teaching your children, we have actual lesson plans on our website that you can download and use to do something different with your child that has to do with looking and thinking about making. And it's all based in the Walters collection.
Well, see, again, Julia, that is so important, because what Nestor and I are finding out, and we're talking to friends and family who obviously are all home struggling, trying to fill these days with their kids, and the resources offered by Baltimore's arts institutions are just incredible. And as you're saying, folks can go on, and I assume all they need to do is simply go to the website at thewalters.org.
I'm on it right now, Don. I'm right here. Around. Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah, it's interactive. Nestor's doing it. We're talking about it. You might be actually doing an art activity, Nestor. We're really learning also about the toggling that needs to happen between the website and then our social media sites. So what we're doing is we're often debuting things that we're doing, like debuting coloring pages that you can download, or, again, these look and learn and make little YouTube videos. We're doing that on social media, and then we're putting it for evergreen life on our website. So you kind of have to be kind of nimble about where you're looking at any given time, and there's something for everyone in all sorts of different places, but soon the website will be the locus for everything that's going to live there forever.
You go right to the front of the website, and it says here, the Walters is open and free to everyone. That's all you need to know, right?
Absolutely, and one of the things that we're super committed to at the Walters is, as the only fully free institution, so admission is always free, and that's both on-site and online. And right now there's a lot of conversation out there about the monetization. How are you going to monetize all your new digitized resources? So it's free now, but it won't be later, right? All these museums are thinking about how they can recoup the income that they have lost through people walking through the door, through these new digital sites. The Walters is committed and will forever be committed to open access and free admission, again, on-site and online. So they're there for you. This is truly your museum, on-site and online.
You know, Nestor, it's one of the, I'd be remiss if I did not give my former boss, Jim Smith, a shout-out back. I think it was in 2006, I think, Julia, when we made it free of charge, and that was certainly Jim's ability to contribute to that as Baltimore County executive and have Baltimore County be part of that. I think it's one of his proudest moments to this day, knowing how important it is to bring art to everyone, right? And it seems to me that, and maybe you can talk a little bit about this, the whole equity approach that the Walters has in terms of art's not just, it's just not for the elite. Art is really for everyone, right?
That's absolutely right. And you know, what's great about the Walters collection and the fact that we are free is we have 7,000 years of works of art created by people, men and women across the globe, you know, again, across time. But not everything in the museum is a really great work of art by that, you know, age-old distinction of a work of art that's created by a singular genius. We have some things that are really there because they're precious. We have an Egyptian shoe sole from 5,000 years ago. We have objects that were made by men and women in Japan 4 years ago. But all of that should be there and really is there because our founder, Henry Walters, wanted to make the collection that he and his father built for Baltimore. And he said in his will that these collections are there for the benefit of the public. And in these times, I and the Board of Trustees and the staff and people like you and Kevin Kamenetz and Jim Smith and the mayors of Baltimore who came together around this notion that art should be for everyone, we are not just honoring that tradition, but we're also thinking about all of those people here in Baltimore who really need to have access in moments like this to these incredible works of art that, or just works made by men and women that speak to us on a human level, to find solace, to find creativity. And there's no price for that. You can't charge for that. That relationship that we have with each other that sits in the objects that we make and through which we communicate, that's something that we should all have access to. So I want to say thank you, Baltimore County, for continuing to be one of our greatest supporters. And that did start in 2006 when a whole bunch of people, the former director of the museum and all of you, had this vision to make the Walters free. And then in 2014, we actually dropped admissions charges for our temporary exhibition. So now when we have a temporary exhibition, that also is free.
Julia Marchiori, Alexander, joining us here. She's executive director and CEO of the Walters downtown. Closed right now for COVID, but very much open for business out online. You can certainly visit them out there. And one of the things that this was birthed on the backside of Freddie Gray and unrest and the city and values and all of the things that we began 2 years ago talking about. And Don and I think we've talked a little bit about this on the program, but maybe even more so off the program, about me living downtown at the Inner Harbor, looking down at the Science Center and looking down at the aquarium and seeing these places that used to always have yellow school buses queued up during any time of the year, maybe even snow days in January and February, where children were coming down and using these institutions. And on the back end of that, when the fear about and, you know, everything on the backside of Freddie Gray changed things, and I'm sure everything's going to change on the backside of the coronavirus as well, but I just found it tragic that these incredible places that I went as a kid, and we're going to have a John on from the Model Lyric, and I always talk about going down there for the Nutcracker when I was a kid with Mr. Hinson in the fifth grade at Colgate Elementary in the 70s, that I think every child should be doing all of these things. Tell me about children coming to your museum as groups, but more than that, as school children. And I'm not sure if you know, but Don and I met under school circumstances in 1982. He was my high school guidance counselor. And these trips were, you know, part of the color of my, and I began this conversation talking about Joyce Bucci being my art teacher back in high school, but experiencing these things when you're young, so important. And I want more people to be bringing their children back to Baltimore for these educational things, which is one of the reasons why we're doing this series, I think.
Thank you so much, Nestor, for giving me the opportunity to talk about the school partnerships that we have with the school. So I was mentioning earlier that right now we're working with teachers throughout the city and county schools and the surrounding counties and even in Maryland with the Maryland schools to create online sort of activities and lesson plans that align with the curriculum. And so that just augments our already really strong relationship with teachers and principals and schools in Baltimore and the surrounding areas, again, particularly the county. But what we have is this incredibly deep relationship that brings tens of thousands of school children to the museum annually, where they get an on-site experience that is then paired with at least one, if not two, in-school experiences with one of our educators. So I always say, while we might count them only when they come through the door, we actually are with these students sometimes two or three times to talk about what we have and how we can use our collections to help them think about whatever subject it is. And, you know, gone are the days when an art museum and going to an art museum was really only about, in art appreciation, which is totally fabulous. But actually, now we teach high school physics through some of our art conservation modalities. We can teach history. We can teach language arts. We have, I have a neighbor who's a math teacher, and she brought her students from Roland Park Elementary to the museum to do a class, a math class with one of our educators, where they did looking at a painting and thought about the shapes and the vectors in the painting. So, you know, art isn't just about art making or about art appreciation, but it is about every single discipline, and we can use it as a crucible, really, for discussions about knowledge in all ways. So our relationship with the city schools, the county schools, and the state schools is a bedrock of everything that we do. So we're looking forward to having those schools come back. And I will say that one of the great things about our the people who make it possible for us to do our work, so all of you and everyone who supports the museum, we actually are able, through the generosity of private philanthropists, to pay for a huge number of school buses to come to bring Title I students from Title I schools to the museum.
So any day I come there, there's kids everywhere. In normal circumstance. I love to hear that.
Just an invaluable experience. I laugh because right before the pandemic, one of my grandchildren went to visit the museum, 8-year-old, and the teacher had, you know, given him the riot act the day before, as you should, about how to behave and how not to behave. And he was excited about going. I said, well, you're going to be able to do that? And he said, I'm not so sure, but I think he did get through and made it okay. And I know he comes out on the other side, you know, better and more enriched. One of the themes on Baltimore Positive for Nestor and me, and again, for those of you listening, get Baltimore Positive wherever you get your podcast or at BaltimorePositive.com. But one of our themes, Julia, is that who people are as children, who they are in elementary school and in middle school, really ends up forming who they are as adults. And I look at your background. You know, you're an arts history and a French major at Wellesley College. You get a master's in French literature from NYU, and then you get a PhD in the history of art from Yale. So let me see. Wellesley, NYU, Yale.
She ate great pizza everywhere she was. Is that what you're getting at?
I did. That's it.
Little girl.
You figured it out.
Little girl.
I've been those places.
In the neighborhood.
I visited.
Say, you know, I dig French and I dig art history. How does that happen?
Well, I think for me it was. I had the opportunity to actually travel when I was a young girl in sixth grade, and my parents took a big European journey, and I went to, it was over the Christmas holidays. And
sounds like a Home Alone episode already. I like
know,
it.
Exactly, or vacation, right?
Touche.
Actually, it was much more staid than that. But we were in places like Versailles and St. Peter's and, you know, the big tourist sites.
Young girl seeing stuff, right? Sixth grade.
I was with my parents and my sister and brother. My sister, who's older than I, she was taking art history at college, and she was our tour guide. She was our docent, kind of taking us around. And I was really moved by how people today still live in spaces and interact in these spaces that are really giant physical works of art in and of themselves. And these people are, in essence, continuing a tradition of interactivity with these cathedrals and monuments and palaces that started thousands or centuries ago. And it's this notion of how you connect your present with the past and what lessons you can learn from being in that dialogue with the past to kind of make a better future for ourselves. I think one of the scariest things for me about this moment is that we've become so momentary and we're living so much in this moment that we're not actually thinking about, and we don't give any, or we don't give enough credence to, gosh, what were the mistakes that we made in the past? How can we learn from them? And where can we take ourselves in the future? If we're just living now, it's really hard to do something that is human nature, right? Because we see from history that you keep making the same mistake over time. So for me, it was this relationship with the past that I found in these buildings and these experiences that made me want to be in a museum and made me want to kind of make these works of art from the past and think about them as creations made by people. So I view them as almost, the way that you can talk to people in the past is through their creations. So I view it as a dialogue, and I love that. It's sort of a mystery and a way to conjure people. It's almost magic. And I love going into a museum and seeing how someone who thinks that they don't want to be there, all of a sudden, you know, they're like, Mom, really?
Everybody's been dragged to a museum, right?
There you go. You've got my 8-year-old grandson who's like, okay, if you say so. Right. And then he goes in.
But, you know, wow. I see these young kids, and they, or even these adults who aren't used to going to museums because they didn't live in Baltimore and they didn't have to go with their school, and their teachers didn't make them go to the museum, and they come in and they fall in love with an object that they know nothing about, but the object and the people who kind of reside as ghosts in the object kind of speak to them, and they draw them in, and all of a sudden they. The individual in the 21st century has a moment of wonder that is their personal moment of wonder, but it's a relationship that they have with a seemingly inanimate object, but that is completely imbued with the spirit of someone who lived thousands of years ago or a century ago in a foreign country or even in Baltimore.
Well, you talk about there. I love hearing you talk about art in that way, because the passion just oozes out. You talk about the moment of wonder for the children. How about you? What is there a collection or an artwork in that museum that when you walk through every day, you go, you know what? This is why I did this. Is there one that touches you in a uniquely special way all the time when you go, man, this is why I do this?
So every minute of every day, I find something new. It's like choosing your favorite child. Right? But I will tell you that I keep coming back to this one object that is a tiny little spherical metal ball, object. It was made in 1530 in Nuremberg, Germany. And it is it's actually a mechanical timepiece. One of the earliest, and we now know through science that it is actually the earliest mechanical timepiece that could be handheld that was made in Western culture, in a Western culture, so European culture.
That's all.
And it's a tiny little object, and usually, you know, because the light is out in the case where it is, but it's kind of a scavenger hunt to find it anyway. But it's this tiny little thing, and when you start to think about this object was made for Martin Luther's thought partner, Philip Melanchthon, and given to him as a gift on New Year's Day in 1530 in thanks for the amazing work that he was doing and thinking about, you know, religion and the changes from Catholicism to Protestantism and what's going on. And so it was a gift from a person to a clockmaker to a person. It is the first handheld timepiece made in Western Europe. And it represents what I think about as the moment when humankind took time into their hands, right? So that's amazing, and it lives in Baltimore all the time.
There you go, and it's free, right? We can come visit, right?
And it's free. Then you think about that as being the first computer, right? The very first iPhone. we don't get the iPhone. You don't get your cell phone or your mobile phone without that thing.
just an amazing story. And I wonder if, building on that, Julia, in your career, which you've dedicated to the arts, I'm sure there are many, but can you identify one or two moments where you talked about that wonder moment for a child? Is there one or are there two moments where you've had an interaction where you have observed either a group or a child or a member of the public experience a piece of art that you thought, boy, that's kind of neat? Anything that sticks out for you in terms of that memory that keeps moving you forward in this journey?
So, you know, your memory is always jogged by the moment in which you sit. And so I would say there were two incredibly moving moments. One is ongoing. It's the moment in which we are now, where we see online, and all you have to do is go to our Twitter or Facebook or our Instagram page, and you can see how our audiences interact with and are appreciative of the work that are, both the work that are at the Walters and the work of the people who work at the Walters, for everything that they do for each other. So the work speak to people, and our staff speak to people, and then the individuals who are reacting with us and conversing with us about our collection and how we're making it accessible. It is truly joyful to see the kind of relationships that we're building through works of art, through our platforms, when we are isolated socially. So we are connecting through the Walters. It continues to be a connection. And then the other moment that really comes out for me is that we had planned in 2015 in late April to sign in a ceremony our strategic partnership MOU, Memorandum of Understanding, with Morgan State University. It was the first partnership of like that between the Walters and Morgan State, one of this country's most important and best HBCUs, historically Black universities and colleges, and it's right here in Baltimore. And of course, you will remember that was when Freddie Gray and the uprisings happened. And we were supposed to sign this agreement the day at the Walters, the day after the uprising. And I remember thinking, there is no way that we cannot do this. So the Wednesday after the uprising, on the Tuesday, faculty and the administration and Dr. David Wilson, the president of Morgan, and I and my board of trustees and our staff joined together in the sculpture court at the Walters to create and mark this historic relationship that we were creating between the Walters Art Museum, which has always been perceived as an elitist white institution, with one of the most important historically Black colleges and universities in America. And we were creating a partnership on the day after the uprising. And it was because we need to walk hand in hand as people through this thing we call life and through society. And we need to create connections and make bridges however we can. And so we did that in an art museum in the middle of Baltimore on Center Street, which was actually devastated by vandalism. And the only place that didn't have its windows broken between Park and the Fallsway was the Walters. And it was on Center Street, the only business on Center Street that was not broken into on the nights of the riots was the Walters. And there we were the day after, coming together in an art museum to forge a partnership and to again, walk through life together, hand in hand. And it was just so moving. So again, we all need each other, and we can connect with our forebears through great works of art and in art museums and cultural institutions.
Julia Marchari-Alexander joining us here. She's Executive Director and CEO of the Walters Art Museum. It is free to visit there. You can go and visit online right now. Your children. Oh, you know, Don, you got 7 grandchildren here, you know, and I've talked to your son and your daughter on Baltimore Positive last 2 weeks. The one thing they've assured me is during this this pandemic that you and Linda are not available to be grandparents, you know, to sit the kids. So this is perfect, right?
We are in grandparent withdrawal, and I'm sure as they listen to this, They are racing to the computer to hop on these websites to they're pulling up right now as we speak, the Walters.org. And we're all getting smarter. I mean, that's the bottom line, right, Nestor? We're all getting smarter. Julia, what's the first thing? What's the first thing you and your team are going to do when we sound that victory bell and get the all clear and we can come out to play again? What do you all look forward to doing?
We are going to open our doors and be out there and saying hello to everyone and
from 6 feet away,
aggressively shaking people's hands and welcoming them. We have what we call the Walters Welcome, which is about making everyone feel welcome warmly when they walk into our doors. And I can tell you, it may actually feel a little bit overly welcoming. I'm going to be so excited to see
people. I mean, we'll be banging elbows or whatever we're allowed to do. Give us a quick preview. Sort of like we're in the movie. We can't go to the movies anymore. Give us the coming attractions. What are some neat things that are coming down the road at the Walters?
Well, if we are able to open in the way that we would normally open, we have in the fall one of the most exciting things that we have done since I have been here, which is to feature, it's the first major museum exhibition of the work of the Baltimore designer and jewelry artist, Betty Cook. And so a world-class jeweler and designer who lives right here in Baltimore. And in this year of woman, she is our greatest excitement in terms of what we're showcasing. And so Betty Cook, and it's called Betty Cook, The Circle and the Line, and we are hoping that we will be able to open that in late September. But that really is what we're looking out for. I will tell you that the most special thing is just going to be opening our doors so that people can come and experience the collection. You know, everyone says that there's going to be an echo, and we have to be prepared for life not to be as it usually is. So we are committed to, if we can open Betty Cook in the fall, we will open it in January. And we just look forward to celebrating Baltimore's most famous female artist, who is still with us at 95, and we're just looking forward to celebrating Betty Cook and Baltimore.
Infinite flexibility is what we got to keep going on here, Julia. I mean, just like you, flexible that we got you from San Diego. You know, I've been out in that area in Balboa Park, and I always say to anyone that comes here from San Diego, and you're the second one this month that I've had on, my friend Jerry Gutierrez over Taco Fiesta's, a Californian that made his way here. We always consider this an upgrade from San Diego, and for everything except the weather.
You know, it is an amazing town, Baltimore. There are very, very few places in this country that can boast the arts community, the eds community, the meds community, and I'm just going to say the food community. It is incredible. Food is an art in this town, food and beverage, and so it's not surprising to me that Jerry came here to make his mark, and so many great culinary artists are here.
Well, you know,
we look forward to, Nestor and I look forward to visiting some more with you in the future. Obviously, when it reopens, we want to come up, want to be a part of those new exhibitions. And Fonda Cohen, I know you're out there listening. Just thanks so much for putting what we call Arts Week together. And Julia, it's been terrific. Please thanks everybody at the Walters for being such an important part of Baltimore and everything that you do, and particularly what you're doing for our school children in these difficult, difficult times. I can't think of anything more Baltimore positive than that. So thank you so much for that.
Well, thank you so much for having me on, and I am so grateful to you for thanking our team of 150 employees who really are the people who make the Walters come alive. So with the visitors and our staff, this is truly your museum. So thank you.
Julia Marchiari Alexander joining us here. She served as the executive director and the CEO of the Walters Art Museum. They are closed due to COVID, but they are open online. And the collection only spans more than seven millennia, from 5,000 BCE to the 21st century. 36,000 objects many of which you can see online as well. Don and I are doing the Baltimore Positive thing. Big shout out to State Fair. At some point, Evan will share the chicken recipe with me so I can fry the chicken. I mean, it won't be the same, I know. And the jalapenos and the waffles will not be the same as well. Fadley's is shipping crab cakes your way, and I'm looking forward to this social distancing. It's keeping me away from the beer and the oysters and the fish and all the fun stuff. We do the mac and cheese over at Fadley's, but they ship those crab cakes to you. And don't forget Moeller and Gary Realty as well. And Jeff Moeller, Don's son, was my guest. Don didn't even know about it, so let alone not participate. Don didn't find it until he found it in the buyatoyota.com audio vault. So there you have it. We are doing Arts Week here this week, and certainly looking ahead to the election, looking ahead to every press conference, every day, every glove, every mask, and hoping that you are washing your hands as well. Keep calm. Stay local. We are WNST.net, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, home of the Walters, and Baltimore Positive. Stay with us.